This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota studios here at AM 950 Radio, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday, although I am lost today. I'll explain in a second here. We got a lot coming up for you. 5 o'clock hour jam-packed. Greta Call from MinPost joining Brett with one of his weekly interviews there. Rachel Hopper is going to join us. She is with the DNR. She's with the fine folks over at Parks and Trails. She's visitor services over there. She is going to join us. They have, I think one thing I can take as a success today. I have increased the park pass annual membership. Apparently, they've been selling so many park passes, state park passes. It's great. And they're fantastic. You've heard us talk about them for the last year. You've seen the photos we've done. State parks are brilliant. Well, some of the ones over on either the North Shore or over on the riverside there. They've got little hills, but, you know, still brilliant, gorgeous. If you get a chance, get out there and see them. And a lot of people are. We'll talk about the rise in the park passes. Patrick joining us right now. Patrick, so I want to start off, I think within 20 minutes of getting up this morning, I was in a full-fledged swear fight with a trucker in my residential neighborhood at 6 a.m. That's how the day got going.
Do I want to know how
yes,
this got
you,
started?
Yes, you do. Well, this is good radio. We want to kind of do a theme and kind of do a story. So for me to kind of abandon it now would be kind of crappy radio. So let me give you the details, because that was just the beginning. That was just the beginning. So I live in Hopkins. Shout out to my home dogs in H-Town. By the way, Raspberry Festival kicking off. They're starting the medallion hunt tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that. We have been, if you know Hopkins at all, the main roads there, especially if you're towards the city of Hopkins, is where the downtown is. I mean, the Hopkins School District has, you know, parts of Minnetonka and Eden Prairie and lots of other communities, Golden Valley in it. But the city of Hopkins itself is kind of wedged in there between Minnetonka and Edina. It's over off of 169 Excelsior Boulevard. That's kind of where that area is. And that's kind of over by where I live. And because basically every road in Hopkins is being constructed on now, it's not the easiest to get through. Well, we have some businesses there that employ semi-trucks, and the semi-trucks have decided that, oh, the heck with it, we're not going to take the posted route that they could take, which is designed for them. They have been shooting through the residential neighborhoods. And if you're like me, there's nothing more delightful at 5:45 in the morning than having one of UNFI's, semi-trucks come plowing through a residential neighborhood to wake everyone up. Thank you. No, thank you. And by the way, just this is a small little municipal thing. I've actually called the city and I said, why aren't you doing this? And it's funny because, Patrick, when I was in the military, and we were in the South, and we were in the South with that. We'd have to drive a truck off a base or something like that. There was a meeting a la like we were doing an attack on Bremen. You'd pull all the truck drivers together. They'd have maps. Here are the streets you can go down. Here are the speed limits on these streets. Do not exceed the speed limits on these streets. They will give you a ticket. Do not deviate from this course. They will give you a ticket, and we will come get the money from you. And we would go on out there, and that route would be lined with local cops just wanting to give a military vehicle a ticket, because that's free money for them. And so we were, you know, and so I know you can give these people tickets. I mean, that's kind of the deal. I know that's kind of how it rolls. But for some reason, the city of Hopkins just doesn't want to upset things. And even though people are driving through areas that are clearly marked not trucks, that doesn't happen. I know this happens at a lot of other places too. It's frustrating. You want to find that balance between responsible business and protecting the community. And, you know, it's always difficult. And I feel sorry, because these are the community issues that really kind of are ones that generate some trouble, as demonstrated by me this morning. So I'm at, now here's where I lost it this morning. So I'm walking my dog. I get down to the intersection. The guy runs the stop sign. It's not only the fact now the semi-truck is running through the neighborhood. They shouldn't be there. They're driving past numerous no truck signs. It's that he just runs a stop sign. I'm like, okay, now we're done. And so what the hell are you doing? You're running a stop sign. You're bringing a semi-truck into a residential neighborhood. And that's when Johnny Colorful Language rolled down the window. Well, what proceeded was, now he's not going to stop, because if he stops and he tries to get in a confrontation, he's going to have, because I'll hit 911 really quick on my cell phone, get a cop out there, and then he has to explain why he's in a residential neighborhood with a semi-truck running stop signs and getting out of his cab and yelling at residents there. He doesn't want that. So he's rolling off. But the reality is, here he, it just, I don't know why. Sometimes I just cracked. I just lost it, and it became a longshoreman's convention. And it was Effenheimer. And this is at 6 a.m., fairly loud in a residential neighborhood. Now I'm the problem. And it wasn't until after I started doing this, I said, boy, I'm going to have to write some apology cards to some of the neighbors here. And really effing sorry, Matt. Boy, am I in blank. You know, that's kind of the mentality I had. But I felt bad. I still feel bad about this. I've lost it. So I'm already on edge, and it just who wants a cherry on top of that sundae? So this morning, now I don't know. Did you see that the soccer tournaments are back up in Blaine, a national sports complex, which I when they built that, I remember is like Blaine. Where's Blaine? Wasn't that the girl from Facts of Life? Oh, that was Blair. No, I can't remember who Blaine was. They built that, and I was like, wow, that is out of the city. Now that is just part of the city now. The city's huge. Minneapolis-St. Paul is just freaking huge. It is. It is just huge. And my daughter is part of that soccer tournament, and all my best to everyone coming into town. A lot of teams coming into town. Hotels are full. Restaurants are getting busy. Ugh, lots of stuff. So we have a game, and the way and if you've ever done these soccer tournaments or any kids' sports activity, you know, you get a weekend tournament or a weekly tournament, and it's, you know, you got a game at noon on this day, you got a game at 10 a.m. the next day, and then 7 p.m. the next day. And then depending on what happens in those three games, you'll have a game on Thursday, Friday, you'll figure it out. That's how they work. The last I'd heard, I was going to a noon game. At 8:15 this morning, my daughter comes out of her room wearing her soccer gear. And I said, well, that's proactive. You're ready to go 3.5 hours. What time is your game at? That's all of a sudden, I asked the question. Now, once again, from the previous story where I was swearing at a trucker in my neighborhood at 6 a.m., I live in Hopkins, okay? Yeah, I'm going to have a hard time living that one down. So I look at her and I said, we've got to get to Blaine. What time's your game at? I'll go check. She comes back and tells me, 9. 8:20 in the morning when she tells me, I've got to get to the Blaine, into the National Sports Complex in Blaine from Hopkins in 40 minutes. Ah! It was at this point I noticed my wife, who was going to take my daughter, was going to go. I go upstairs. She is apparently sick as a dog. Now, not coronavirus, allergies. Do you know anyone that's gotten these allergies right now, Patrick? Some people are just on their cabooses with them.
Well, fortunately, that has not happened to my mom or I, which is kind of surprising.
Well, do you usually get them bad?
Not terribly, but they're usually worse in the early spring and the fall.
I get them sometimes in early spring, early fall, just like you. I know some people that have gotten allergies right now that are just absolutely wiped out, and they got my wife. So I look at her and I'm like, oh, this is why I have no idea what's going on. You are out of commission. So I load up all fresh too. And I was fresh and just feeling great after my swear fest, my salute to X-rated movies that I did in my neighborhood around my neighbors this morning at 6 a.m. with a trucker. I was just feeling fresh in Grand Prix. And I should also mention, just to add an extra level of complication, of course, I had to go through a little bit of a health crisis. One of the medications I'm still taking is a diuretic. I had just taken that pill. Oh boy, now it's a game show. Let's see if we can make it all the way to Blaine. Oh! That was my morning, and got up there. I got my daughter there. Sorry for the two-wheeling, okay? I got him up on the side. I had to bank it. I got up there with like 4 minutes before game time, so go team go. But yeah, that's that, you know, and that, you know, my entire day is off. I got into the kitchen. I did get into the kitchen. I made some homemade chicken noodle soup. I made up some homemade tomato soup too, so my wife is okay in case there's a problem. Kids got some food. I'm good. So how's your day going, Patrick? Have you sworn at any truckers in the neighborhood lately?
I did kind of swear last night. I was actually driving through Hopkins because I was.
Was that you? I was swearing.
Yeah, my dump truck. That's my personal vehicle.
It gets your respect at those intersections. I will say that. Sorry for yelling at you, but man, you have a colorful dialogue. I will say that I was impressed. I mean, I was blushing a little bit there this morning. Why were you swearing last night?
Well, I was on Excelsior Boulevard, headed toward Blake Road, and I'm thinking about turning onto Blake Road, and I'm like, wait a minute. Then I'd have to go through that whole detour back down Blake. Blank that.
Yeah, it is. I mean, and we're not. I mean, my gosh, the amount of roads that are being constructed on. It's part of a lot of it is the light rail construction. They're building the light rail line through, and that's a big problem there with Excelsior. But man, sorry to everyone out there. I am a menace to freaking society. I'm Matt. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Trying to stay sane. Here's the one bit of good news. How about I share a little bit of positivity? Because I was one of the things I was noticing when I was up in Blaine. And Patrick, you and I have talked about this a few times. My gosh, how many people's houses, yards are just a dried hay forest at this point? Sven has a weather forecast. We're going to get soaked tomorrow. We're going to get some serious rain tomorrow. So good news. About time. Especially, I think it's in Wright County. Eastern Wright County is just brutal right now. And the farmers need this. So there is that level of positivity. There is some rain coming through. We need that. Hopefully that takes care of some things. Steve is in Minneapolis. He wanted to chime in on truckers. Welcome on in, Steve.
Hi.
Hey.
A long time ago, I was 25 years old, and I lived in an apartment in rural Minnesota where I could spit on Highway 23 from my bedroom window. Now, there was a guy that come through about twice a week. Do you know what a Jake break is?
Oh, yeah. I lived in rural
really
Minnesota.
Noisy.
I've lived in rural Minnesota as well, yeah. I know what you're talking about.
So he'd come into town and throw on his Jake break at 3 o'clock in the morning, like twice a week. Now, I was not the calm, rational man I am today.
Of course not.
And, you know, my first thought was pump some buckshot in his butt.
Dear Lord, no.
Then I thought about that and went, well, maybe I could just drop a rock on his hood.
No, not a good idea.
So I eventually settled for setting my alarm when I knew he was coming and just lobbing a water balloon on his windshield, and it actually worked.
That's actually, it's resourceful. I guarantee you scared the guy. He's probably wondering what the heck was that.
That's the thing. Jake brakes are for running through mountains. They're not through going through flat Minnesota, you know?
No, Steve, I know, and I can tell you very much so. I very much sympathize with your situation. I know exactly the sound there. Some people like to do that. I mean, there's the guy in our neighborhood who's got that incredibly loud motorcycle, and he gets up and he gets going in the morning on Saturday mornings at 7 a.m. and he gets up and drives down, and I think he thinks it's cool. No one else does. You get trains, and sometimes trains, there's specific whistles they're supposed to do at certain intersections. But sometimes you'll get a train in the middle of the night, they'll just wail on the horn. That's just the way those people are. I mean, that does happen. It just, you kind of get your point. I will say this, my frustration aside, and my just my stellar example of my you know, decent human being, my Christian principles aside, that I displayed this morning, I apologize to everyone out there. It's not what you should do. No, you shouldn't follow my lead, nor should you be contemplating violence of any kind, but I'll give him credit, Steve, on that one, the water balloon. That's not a bad call. That's not, you know, it kind of solves a problem. So 952-946-6205. Thank you for letting me vent. I hopefully feel better. I've got some interesting information. As a matter of fact, I am very glad Reformer, Minnesota Reformer, actually had an article today that talks Delta variant. I want to talk about that other coronavirus stuff. We'll do a coronavirus update when we do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. By the way, I should mention, Minuteman did those great calendars there, too. Thank you, guys. You guys did a fantastic job with that. Trust your printing, Minuteman Press. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Hey, I did want to make sure I mention, of course, Just Folk is a band there for Todd Colid. He's a big sponsor of the radio station here. He lives in Spain, and he loves the station. He likes to sponsor us. They, of course, have a new song out, Is It Monday, by Just Folk, featuring Jesse King. Everyone around the world can relate to our band's new release. Link there, I thought I got it up last night. I'll make sure I get the link up today for the song. Make sure you click on it, follow it, like it, listen to it. It's very good, all right? Thank you very much. If you'd like to sponsor the station, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, as well as you can also call our office numbers, 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885, 952-946-6205, if you want to call us right now. The Delta variant. Now, I got to tell you the truth. I am incredibly happy the Minnesota Reformer has put out an info page on the Delta variant. Because there has been a lot of people I've realized that there's a lot actually of misinformation about this. We need to make sure we understand something. Get vaccinated. Please get vaccinated. And completely vaccinated. Not just one dose. Get the full dosage and get vaccinated, because that's the best way to stave off the coronavirus. It is absolutely, and the Delta virus too. I'll get to that in a second. It is the best way to do it. And I think there's a lot of people, we not only have to talk about the fools who are, I'm never getting vaccinated, that are getting sick and saying, why am I getting sick? Well, because you didn't get vaccinated. Because as we talked about, 99% of the people that died, 99% of the people that died in June of this year died because they were unvaccinated. Only 1% were vaccinated, and those numbers, once again, it was only 150 people out of 18,000. That's insanity. The numbers tell you get vaccinated and get completely vaccinated. That's the other problem. A lot of people get one dose of the two doses, and they say, well, that's good enough. I'll take a light version. It should take care of me. No, you want to get the full vaccine, okay? As the Delta variant takes hold, the unvaccinated are in for a rude awakening. It's not just ignorance there begging for a Darwin Award. Unfortunately, that's thanks to the unvaccinated, vaccinated Americans are now being put more at risk. The Delta variant, a mutant strain of the coronavirus, early estimates suggest the new strain may be 35% to 60% more transmissible. More transmissible. Then the Alpha variant, yet another mutated strain that was already 43 to 90% more transmissible than the original. In simple terms, it's not great. So these variants are getting out there and they're becoming more prevalent. The Delta variant is already causing surges in cases, at least half the states. 43 states, I believe, had seen a surge. And what the numbers today were showing, I want to be careful here. The numbers in Minnesota are skewed because they just stopped doing daily updates on Saturday and Sunday. So what you're getting is a three-day ratio of cases. So you'll see in the Star Tribune and Bring Me the News and a few other, I think MinnPost might have it too, the case count is higher today, and it's dramatically higher in the 300s, but it's 3 days worth of cases. So it's skewed. So you got to be careful. But that aside, now that's Minnesota. And I'm not saying that the numbers aren't going up in Minnesota, namely in Republican counties where people are screaming, don't get vaccinated. But it's what you're seeing is nationwide. There's 43 states where the numbers are going up, and almost in every place where this is going up, it's going up in areas where anti-vaxxers and anti-vaccine people are now the most susceptible people. In Missouri, a state with the lowest vaccination rate of only 39.4, hospitalizations increased a whopping 30% over the 4th of July weekend alone. Minnesota, with more than 50% of the population vaccinated, cases in hospitals have dropped precipitously since spring, have ticked up slightly in recent days, though. The Delta variant arrived in the state on April 7th, and since then, more than 100 Minnesotans have tested positive for the new variant. Here are the answers, some common questions for the vaccinated and unvaccinated about the Delta variant, okay? Are vaccines still working against Delta? Yes, the vaccines still work against the Delta variant, but only if you're fully vaccinated. All right? Pfizer vaccine, which is similar to Moderna's, is currently showing an 88% effectiveness rate against the Delta variant, with early evidence suggesting it holds up to a 96% effectiveness rate against hospitalization. So basically what it's saying is this. If you're fully vaccinated, the chances of you getting the Delta variant actually are pretty diminished. But even if you do get the Delta variant, the chance that you go into the hospital is even slighter than if you even got it. So by all means, being vaccinated is the safest bet with the Delta. Even though it's slightly reduced in efficiency, these are still excellent protections, and they still are. Those are good numbers. Meanwhile, partially vaccinated people may see as little as 33% efficiency for protecting against illness, and they join the unvaccinated in being more likely to get hospitalized. In short, getting the vaccine in full is key. You should get your second dose if you haven't had it yet, okay? Should you wear a mask? Maybe. I think it depends on the situation. Like, I'll still go to the grocery store early in the morning. I go generally in like 7, 8 in the morning, and it's relatively empty. So I don't feel the need to, but there have been times like I've popped into a grocery store later in the day and I'll have a mask in my pocket. And I'll pop one on because, you know, yeah, it's packed in there. And I don't, especially if I have to wait in a long line. The CDC has yet to issue an update, given that even mild cases may be associated with long-term health effects. It's wise to be cautious, though, particularly if you live in a region with a low vaccination rate. Now, I live in Hennepin County. We live in one of the better counties here. The entire eastern side of Minnesota, Olmsted County down in the south, the Arrowhead region, Duluth, you guys have been doing great. It's the knuckleheads out in the Republican districts where you've got Republicans saying, I think they're going to magnetize you when you come to your door, you know. That's where we're going to have problems. And here's the other side of that story, too, by how, once again, we've talked about this for a year. The lack of needed health care in those districts, the dramatic loss of rural health care in America. That's not a good thing. So wearing a mask makes sense, especially if you're going to someone. If you're going someplace where you know there's a lot of Republicans who are not getting vaccinated, it's better safe than sorry. In general guidelines, if you're entering an indoor space, cannot verify the vaccine status of those in the room, wear a mask. Should you travel? Is it possible to travel responsibly, safely if you're vaccinated? But your travel might look different than usual, as you may consider weather, time of year, destinations. Now you may want to avoid destinations with low vaccination rates or active outbreaks, particularly if you have children under 12 who cannot be vaccinated. Basically, stay away from Branson, Missouri, and Vegas. Ugh. It sounds like those two places are getting hammered. Branson especially. As Colbert said last night, the vacation Mecca for people that hate Mecca, it is Branson, Missouri. And I think you just got to be careful. If you're going someplace, I mean, frankly, if I can be blunt, if you're going to a Republican state where there's a lot of belligerent politicians talking about, you ain't going to make me get no vaccine, South Dakota, Texas, Florida, buyer beware. If you're going someplace where, you know, Boston, where they're vaccinated quite a bit out there in New England, I think Washington, D.C. has got a pretty good high vaccination rate. I think you're going to be okay. I think you just got to look at what you're going into. My family won't get vaccinated. Can I still visit? That's an ugly argument. That's a discussion. Visiting an unvaccinated family member comes with higher risk, especially when a person who is unvaccinated. Even with the vaccine, it might be possible for a vaccinated member to transmit the Delta variant due to slightly lower efficiencies. Accepting this risk is your family's choice, however. And I will just say this. Would it make your family better if one of you got everyone else sick? If, you know, I'm going to go visit my family when they're vaccinated. That's kind of the deal. Everyone gets vaccinated. We all sit down together. That's how you do it. Could Delta lead to new variants that fully evade vaccines? Possibly. Experts have repeatedly warned that if we do not reduce cases and increase our herd immunity against the virus, we are likely to see more mutations. While some mutations are irrelevant, some are not. Already there have been a Delta Plus variant on the heels of this one. In cases increase, we could actually see more. The science behind vaccines is solid, and at least for now, they're holding out against variants, but this might not always be the case. Getting vaccinated soon is absolutely our best defense against not only this variant, but any variants to come. It's good information. We haven't really had a good breakdown of the Delta variant, but I think the one thing you can take away from this is if you're fully vaccinated, you got a lot of protection against the Delta variant. And that, I think, is where we need to start. Now, we can't, I mean, obviously, no one's going to force people to get vaccinated, but, you know, I don't know what else you need to see. And lately, unfortunately, there have been story after story because this Delta variant is very much specifically targeting people who have not purposely not gotten vaccinated, and namely these Republicans who are insisting, oh, well, I'm immune. And now all of a sudden they're on a respirator or getting oxygen saying, I can't believe I was so stupid. And nor can I, if you want to know the truth, but I'm glad you're alive. As I've said from the beginning, I don't want anyone sick. I don't want anyone dead. And I sure don't want to see your entire life upended by crippling medical debt because you've had an extended stay and you have long-term side effects from coronavirus. Get vaccinated, please. There still is a lot of places that have free shots. You can still get a shot and you can still get fully vaccinated. That is your best defense. End of story, end of argument. And any Republican that implies anything differently is lying to you for their own political purposes. Please wake up. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A little more on the positivity of Biden's the coronavirus vaccine rollout. Plus, also, good news, there's actually going to be an investigation on what happened with that Line 3 at Willow Creek. I'll get to that as well. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I want to add this one bit to the coronavirus update. The coronavirus vaccine blitz saved at least 279,000 lives and prevented 1.25 million hospitalizations, according to a new study out of Yale University. The vaccines have been strikingly successful in reducing the spread of the virus and saving hundreds of thousands of lives in the United States alone. And lead author Allison Galvani, the Burnett and Stender family's professor of epidemiology at the Director of Center for Infectious Disease Modeling and Analysis at Yale School of Public Health, which led the study, and could not possibly put any more words in that title. Dear Lord. However, the Delta variant could change those gains if more people don't step up and get the jab. Until a greater majority of Americans get vaccinated, many more people could still die from this virus, she said in the statement. The danger is not over. And now is not the time to let our guard down. Researchers looked at the impact of the vaccine rollout by simulating the caseload arc under two scenarios, with one with no vaccines program, the other with the scaled-down vaccination program. They compared the numbers of infectious hospitals and deaths in the current situation from December 12th of last year to June 28th. Besides the additional deaths and hospitalizations that have occurred without vaccination program, the researchers found that if vaccines had been rolled out at half the pace, they would have been nearly 121,000 additional deaths, more than 450,000 additional hospitalizations, they said in the study, which was published by the Commonwealth Fund. Moreover, without the vaccination program, there might have been as many as 45,000 daily deaths during the second 2021 spring surge, eclipsing the observed daily peak of 4,000 during the first 2021 winter surge, the study, the author said. I want a quick step back here, and I want to say this. There were people within the Trump administration that were trying. And there were some smart ideas that did get put forward, namely streamlining this vaccination process to get those vaccinations ready to go. Because we remind you, when we started this pandemic, most of the time for a vaccine to be able to come to market, you were looking at it was 3 or 4 years. I think the rocket speed at that point was like 5 years after testing. So there were people in that administration that were helping to streamline this and get it out. Where this really kicked into gear, though, was with President Biden. Because, and it should be reminded, that Trump mainly took the vaccines that were being produced and put them to loyal areas where there were his loyal voters and was not distributing them effectively. And when Joe Biden, when they finally admitted to the incoming Biden administration what was in place, it became very real that, A, there was zero stockpile of vaccines available in the United States. B, there was no plan to distribute those vaccines. And C, there was no infrastructure in place, even if there was a plan to distribute those vaccines. And Joe Biden and his administration, when they came on in, that just became the only goal they had, was to get as many people with vaccines, and it's done well. And should be mentioned, too, This is why there still are these areas in this country, Republican areas, where people are not getting vaccinated, is because of the resentment of Joe Biden doing a good job. Because isn't that really the modern Republican right now? The inability to say, oh, well, I you can say anything you like. Joe Biden got a lot of vaccines in a lot of people's arms. No, he's trying to force it on us. He's evil. I mean, you guys are broken, man. Used to be, as a country, we'd celebrate things like, I mean, imagine if this was the mentality back when Salk came up with the polio vaccine and you disagreed with the president when they were trying to get out the inoculations on that. And you're just like, I'd rather have polio than get the vaccine. The vaccine's going to magnetize me. Look, I'm going to put a pin against my forehead. Ow. Do it the flat side. Okay. But, that's kind of how we've gotten so broken, is because it's not the fact that Joe Biden didn't do a great job. It's that Republicans are so infuriated when a Democrat does such a good job that they basically have to create a narrative of, no, it's vaccines are bad. And that's just who these people are. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. I want to talk about, we mentioned a few days ago a story which, in my mind, should have brought an immediate cease and desist order to the construction of Line 3 in northern Minnesota. And that was that as Line 3 was digging the channel for their pipeline underneath the Willow River in Aitkin County, they basically created some sort of, they hit an aquifer and created a toxic plunge from that as they were drilling the hole. And I said, wait a minute here. You guys have created a toxic nightmare without the oil, tar sands oils that you're going to pump through that pipe. You just did this on your own building the pipe. How in the world can we trust you to actually run oil through it when you can't even build it without making a mess? And it just so happened, the only reason we found out about this is that there were some anti-Line 3 activists that just happened to be at that point where they were seeing the sludge. And it has something to do, I think it has something to do with the water and the stuff they shoot out when they're digging the holes under things and they hit the aquifer. So then all that toxic water then comes up through the creek and they were seeing these kind of muddy plumes of garbage coming in. And apparently Enbridge had known about it because there was actually containment buoys and other ish things there to try to prevent this from going downstream. And if, as many people pointed out, whenever something like this does happen, generally it's a year or so before they'll finally admit, oh, by the way, last year we screwed up when we were digging the hole. The fact that they discovered this as it was happening is a good thing. And in my mind, as I said last week when this came to light, well, this should be kind of the beginning of putting this pipeline on hold, correct? This should be a case where, all right, if they can't dig the hole for the pipeline without making a mess, shouldn't there be an immediate review of not only what went on at Willow River, but what's been going on the entire rest, that we should send out the investigators to see exactly what has been going on the entire pipeline? The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is investigating a drilling fluid spill that occurred on the Willow River in Aiken County, in one of Enbridge's construction sites. Drilling was halted after a non-toxic spill was discovered early July 6th, and containment and cleanup activities were started, MPCA spokeswoman Corey Rood Young said Monday. The MPCA has been in regular communication with the on-site independent environmental monitors and Enbridge Energy, and we have inspected the site cleanup. The new pipeline will replace Enbridge's current Line 3. The site where the spill occurred is one of several along a 340-mile route where Enbridge is undertaking horizontal directional drilling to bury its $3 billion pipeline below the waterways. Now, I'm going to stop really quick. Once again, you're just digging the hole. You can claim it's not toxic. It sounds like there is some toxicity level to this. The fact that you've got cleanup buoys out there would also imply that. But once again, we can't trust, even if it is non-toxic, we can't trust you guys to do this right. How do you not have surveys of that entire area to know where all the aquifers are? How do you not know where you are supposed to drill safely? And now you want to put oil into that pipeline after you build it? My God, please. This is just dumb at this point. The drilling method involves sending a pressurized mud mixture into the tunnel beneath the stream before pulling the pipe through. So basically, and that's what's coming up. So it's that pressurized mud mixture, which it doesn't sound non-toxic to me. Needless to say, that's what they're seeing. They basically hit an aquifer. This pressurized mud came up through the aquifer. So all of a sudden, on Willow River, you start having these large brown blobs of pressurized mud, which are coming up from below, which, by the way, should be mentioned. Now we have an aquifer that's been punctured that's underneath the river. I can't imagine that's going to go well. Between 80 and 100 gallons of drilling mud were released, according to the MPCA. There are no impacts to any aquifers, nor are there any downstream impacts because environmental control measures were installed at this location. That's what the Enbridge spokeswoman said in a statement. Mind you, Enbridge didn't say anything until those activists had seen the plumes coming up. And now the MPCA is involved in this. So I don't quite know how much we can necessarily take with that. I don't trust Enbridge at all. I do not trust these people at all. The drilling operation was immediately shut down. Crews followed the procedure, managing the containment and cleanup materials as specific project permits. The company will need clearance from the MPCA before resuming drilling, which is outside the palisaded Aiken County. The drilling mud released was bentonite clay, water, and xanthan gum additive called Sandmaster, approved by the MPCA 401 water quality certification. Xanthan gum is non-toxic, sucrose-based emulsifier more commonly used as a food additive. Well, that's that. Doesn't sound natural to me. Oh, and let's go back to the bentonite clay. I don't think that's natural to that river. Pipeline opponents seized on the spill, so the drilling mud regulators is comprised of fine particles which can smother aquatic life. Water protectors were at Willow River to prevent the very harm that was occurring, said Aiken County resident and pipeline opponent Shania Matterson. Protesters have continued locking themselves to equipment blocking construction stuff on the entire pipeline. Enbridge plans to have the pipeline, which will carry 780,000 barrels of oil per day from Canada to Superior, Wisconsin, to be shipped to someone else to use, not us, in operation by the end of the year. It takes a partly new route to replace the existing Line 3, which is running at half capacity due to corrosion. But I'm sure, this pipeline that we screwed up as we're digging, it will be fine. It'll be fine! In addition to the drilling mud release, MPCA is continuing to investigate dewatering charges that have allegedly been non-compliant with the MPC authorizations, according to a letter sent in March to the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. The DNR recently approved Enbridge's request to move 10 times as much water as originally planned through the project, about 5 billion gallons. You guys, come on. This is a garbage project that shouldn't be going through. And clearly, and we can't trust them. You can't trust them to dig it right, for goodness sakes. Julie is in Minneapolis. She wants to chime in on line three. Welcome on in, Julie.
Hi, Matt. You got to most of what I was going to say. I noticed this article. It was on the front page of the business section of the Minneapolis paper today. You know, I got to be a little critical. You know, the paper was awfully... Shouldn't the Minneapolis paper be a little embarrassed that they don't report something negative about Enbridge until it's published everywhere else, practically? I know they've got the big full-page ads and something, but I noticed the writer, Brooks Johnson, kind of downplayed it. I mean, they talk about oil through the pipeline, but he doesn't mention that it's tar sands oil, and that's not the opinion of a protester. That, you know, that's just a fact. So they've been a little late. I'm fine. I'm glad they got to it. But, yeah, I would like to see the paper do a little more digging, a little more investigative reporting into, you know, in the past, Enbridge has waited a whole year to report a spill and so forth. So,
well,
I'm still waiting for something like that to happen. I may have to wait a long time, but thanks for bringing it up, Matt.
Julie, all you need to know about the integrity of a modern news outlet that is basically dependent on their advertisers to basically get going on whether or not they're going to report negatively on the people who are basically bankrolling full-page ads in their paper or on their newscast. Let's go to the Viking Stadium. Viking Stadium, Viking Stadium, Viking Stadium, good idea, good idea, good idea. The first time there was a question on whether or not it was a good idea to spend all that money on the Viking Stadium was the day after the stadium was approved, when it was gone, it was done. Then all of a sudden, Star Tribune decided to do some quote-unquote due diligence after it couldn't be stopped. Boy, that's a lot of money, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Too bad you didn't have that discussion before you guys checked up your spine into the coat check room over there. But that's just, you know, the story I got out of it was from the Bemidji paper. And because, frankly, you just said it, the way that the story in the Strib was downplayed was a little bit too toxic for me. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. My problem is when all of a sudden that the inevitable toxic spill is going to happen. And it will. That pipeline will spill like crazy. And it's going to poison a river. It's going to poison a lake. It's going to poison some land. And the Star Tribune is going to be like, gee, who could have seen that coming? Wow. And then even you take the narrative as like, well, the poor oil company, they shouldn't have to clean up this mess. Won't somebody think of the oil company? Yeah, that's where I kind of run against it. 952-946-6205. But to prove that I can go both sides of this, let's go to a different story here. And this is, I'm going back to the Representative Thompson story. And once again, I'm going to repeat something here that I think a lot of people have to, you know, as everyone is outraged about Representative Thompson feeling like he was, you know, being profiled in a police stop, does anyone really have, especially anyone who's not black or a minority, have the ability to question whether or not a minority feels like they're being profiled by the police on a police stop in Minneapolis, St. Paul right now? I don't think I have any ability to question anyone who's black who feels as if when they get pulled over, they're being racially profiled. I don't feel I have any ability to say a damn thing. If he feels like he's being racially profiled, I think the evidence and the circumstance of what the city's gone through dictates that his concern is probably warranted to a point. Now, that aside, and it sounds like they're going to release the body cam footage. Thompson says he wants to. The police have said you need to come in and sign the form. He's going to come in and sign the form, it sounds like, and they're going to release the footage this afternoon. They might have already done so at this point. But I'm going to go back to what I am concerned about is a much larger problem, which is it doesn't sound like Representative Thompson lives in his district. Because, okay, so we talked about the driver's license. He renewed his driver's license in Superior, Wisconsin in November of last year, which he shouldn't have done if he's residing in a district in St. Paul where he is the House rep. But the problem is there's another layer to this. Even if he does have a residence in St. Paul, it does seem to be a question of whether or not he is actually in his district, which is you're supposed to live in your district if you're a House rep. And pretty much most House reps do. Republican, Democrat, they live in their House districts. When he was arrested, the copy of the ticket issued by St. Paul Police to Thompson, on the ticket it says his home address is Blair Avenue in St. Paul. The problem is that house is not in his district, and the state law requires state representatives to live in their district. This is from WCCO. So not only do we have this question about the Superior driver's license, which now it sounds like the Wisconsin Attorney General is going to start looking into it, or potentially could be looking into it in regards to whether or not he lied about his residence to get a driver's license in Wisconsin, which you're not supposed to do. But even if he does put down an address in St. Paul, it doesn't match the address he's supposed to have, which should be in his own district. Okay. Minnesota DFL, if I may, you need to pull Representative Thompson aside. And you need to look at him right now and say to him, where are you living? What is your residential street address? We're going there now. Not a P.O. box. Where is your home address? And if his home address is not in his district, you need to immediately ask for his resignation because that's against the law. He should not be the representative. Now, I have zero doubt the Democrats will hold that seat and the DFL will continue on, you know, in that case. But if he does not live in his district, that's a huge no-no, and I would not tolerate that from a Republican. I will not tolerate from a DFLer. So, DFL, time to basically take control of the situation. Hour two up next. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Matt, Patrick, and Brett Johnson, kind enough to join us. Step into studio here. You hear about my morning? Did you hear about me swearing like a sailor at 6 a.m. in my neighborhood?
I don't blame you. A couple of years ago, I had an Amazon Prime driver just cruising down a residential street where kids were playing, too. I didn't yell at the guy, but if I was out there, I might have been tempted to.
Can I just say this? And I want to be consistent because I've always said, I always kind of get a little when I see someone's like that puts up the signs like, drive like your kids live here. Because the first thing I said is like, why? You don't ever drive like your kids live anywhere else. Let's just be honest about it. It's more of a very self-serving thing. But I don't have any problem with anyone who basically says, I don't want people plowing through my driveways and in our neighborhoods and running stop signs or having semis coming through like this. It just is. I allowed my worst instincts to take over. It was early. It was a bad day. It went down. I'm actually more impressed I managed, after taking a diuretic, to get from Hopkins to the National Sports Complex in Blaine.
That's the impressive part I heard. 8:20, you figure out you got to get your daughter to a 9 o'clock game. I've driven to Blaine before streaming events, and you and I live in sort of the same area.
Yeah,
it's not a short drive.
It is. That 610 highway is nice. That 610 highway you guys have done, mwah, you guys, thank you for that.
How did you get there by 8:55? Were you going like 90 up the freeway?
No, Brett, I was driving the speed limit.
Oh, you're going 55 the whole way. Yeah,
I was doing, I had my signals. I use my arm signals as well. There you go. I'm taking a left. 952-946-6205, just to prove the chaos has exploded in Minnesota today. A bear ran after in the woods after it stole a camper's handgun. Oh, God. ran into the woods after it stole a northern Minnesota camper's handgun.
I wanted to hear that. Was it smarter than the average bear?
Apparently, do you want to mess with him? The DNR's weekly conservation officer's report, courtesy of Mary Manning. Manning says she was working in the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness with a U.S. forest officer a few days a week when the pair received a call report of an armed bear in the BWCA.
They have like a note, don't tread on me sign.
He's got a Trump flag.
Yeah, Yogi, you've kind of taken a dark turn there, bud.
Yogi's gotten into QAnon. There
was just it was just a tour group on 1-6. Apparently, the camper had a handgun and several delicious-smelling snacks in a backpack because Lord knows when I'm grabbing into a backpack to get something delicious to put near my face, that's where I also stole my loaded firearm.
Is that a sandwich or a gun? I don't know.
I'll put it in my mouth one way or the other. I'll eat it. The bear managed to steal the full pack from the portage landing, ran off with it into the woods. The campers weren't able to track the bear. The officers responded. Well, were they trying? He's armed. Did you think he meant to take the gun? What would happen? Okay, so let's just run this scenario for a sec, okay? Bear finds delicious snacks, proceeds to rip apart the bag, gets the gun, manages to paw the trigger or something, and gun goes off. At the same time, camper is trying to track down the gun, say, do you think he knows what he's doing? Bang! Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Run! Run! He's after us! They searched the area, eventually found the pack, partially shredded, Manning Roque with numerous empty snack wrappers, also in the pack, the gun, which was described as undamaged. Dry conditions throughout much of the state have impacted black bears' natural food sources this summer. So if you're actually, did your report actually say delicious snacks? And what did you have in there? Because that's got to be truth in advertising. That can't be, you know, delicious snacks can't be like dried fruit. No, it's got to be like, I got some Reese's peanut butter cups right here.
Let's be honest. Anyone that's packing a gun with their snacks is probably not having the best of food in their basket.
Beef jerky. It's jerky. And it's not beef jerky. It's like elk jerky. And the guy's like trying to hand it around. It's my own teriyaki sauce. It's really good. And you take a bite of it, you're like,
I'd rather have the gun.
Have you ever tasted teriyaki before? I'm just going to ask you.
Probably got the Cliff Bars going too.
Well, no, the Cliff Bars would be the natural guy with the hammock. You know, that, and he's basically turning himself into a delicious snack at that point by hanging himself in a bag on the side of the road there. So, and I will say this because we were up north and they were saying when I was up north in Virginia, north of Virginia, there were some bear sightings up there. And so, and bears don't like humans for the most part. They right. love our delicious snacks, mind you, and our firearms. But the bears don't like us. And so I would go out in the morning and I'd just kind of, hey, bear, blah, 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 and make noise. And, you know, they generally, if there was anything out there, they'd run away. I didn't see any, but they did say up by, was it Argyle? Is it Argyle, the town just north? There's a little town just north of us. Where my cabin is, and they said that there's some they'd seen some bears running around up there, and that actually was a little close. I've not seen it. There have been bears on our property about 15 years ago. We had someone actually we have a bathroom outside, and they came to the bathroom. And there's a bear at the other side, and my brother was like right away, like get back in the bathroom, and he came running out with pans and scared off the bears. But for the most part, they're having trouble because it's so dry up there. Mm-hmm. Most of their food sources are gone. So. It's they're looking for delicious snacks.
Maybe that bear's onto something buying the gun. He can just go hunt his own food rather than
interact. Well, I mean, it does kind of remove the middleman. You know, you got to be a little more picky. But it's a black bear. He's going to shoot bears. He's going to shoot the fish. That would be a Trump supporter. He's sitting there, a bear sitting on the side of a lake shooting rounds into the water. Hey, Trump. You know.
What would happen though if you're out camping and you run into a bear that's carrying a gun? What do you do?
First of all, there would be a moment. There would be like a 10-second moment where the bear would be looking at you with the gun. And you'd be looking at the bear going, is that bear got a gun? And you just kind of like unexpected beyond unexpected. By the way, it's got to be like elk jerky or something like that. Because, of course, he described it as delicious snacks. Yeah. Okay, he was trying to sell it. Oh, I got the best. I've got some moose jerky here that's pepper jack. Oh, God. But he's of course, that's why they described it. And did the bear, it doesn't sound like the bear ate all the delicious snacks. So maybe like, oh, what the heck? No. I'm done with this.
Yeah.
My guess. Armed bears, folks. This is where our thanks to Republicans in outstate Minnesota. This is what we've gotten. Thank you very much, Tom Bach. You jerk. See what happens when you lead the DFL? The bears start to arm themselves.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know who's voting for him. He's popular. He's popular with the bear crowd. Have you been to his rallies? It's a fascinating crew that shows up.
The only way you can stop a bad bear with a gun is a good bear with a gun.
Well, maybe the coyotes or wolves. Well, the wolves at this point. I mean, at this point, we're going to just do gangs. It's going to be like a northern Minnesota version of West Side Story. Jeez. 952-946-6205. Okay, we're done talking about this. You, one of our favorite people, Greta Call. You got to chat with her.
Indeed, yeah. We talked about long-term COVID effects in kids. That's something we haven't really...
That is terrifying.
Oh, and, totally.
and one of the things I was reading about was in India. Now, obviously, I don't think you guys are going to touch on this per se, but that they're really realizing, especially how that caste system works over there, they're going to have years of problems with healthcare because of just the kids alone. And because the kids fall below a certain age threshold, they're not getting any treatment at all. So it's basically unmitigated, untreated coronavirus until it goes off on its own. And then the long-term problems they're having in those cases, rough. But that's there. It's been a problem. We've talked about it here in the United States and Minnesota as well, that it's not just getting coronavirus and surviving, God, hopefully surviving a hospital stay. It's those long-term consequences.
And that's what's often forgotten when we talk about COVID. People look at deaths and cases and don't realize there are long-term consequences.
Yeah.
Do you want a year of not being able to breathe? I mean, or more? Yeah.
Oh, horrible. Greta Call, Min Post with Brett Johnson right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson with you here on a Tuesday afternoon. We're joined now by Greta Call. She is the data reporter for MinPost, website minpost.com, for the latest in Minnesota political news, as I wanted to chat with her about a couple of recent pieces she wrote. One is on long-term COVID effects in children, and the other is on price increases we've been seeing in Minnesota and around the country, as those are both very timely topics given what's going on in the news. So, Greta, thanks so much for joining me on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's start off with your piece that talks about how kids generally don't develop severe cases of COVID, but what about those long-term symptoms or long COVID? We've heard a lot about that with adults, but not so much in children. And before we dive into that, can you first tell us a little bit about how long COVID is defined, at least as you had a chance to speak to a number of health professionals in the state, and what types of effects people get from long COVID and how long they normally last?
Yeah, so long COVID is the phenomenon we're hearing about where people who are diagnosed with COVID still have symptoms, maybe not of COVID, but of other, like loss of taste, fatigue, all kinds of things. They can have heart palpitations and just kind of a whole suite of symptoms that linger for sometimes months for some people now a year after they were actually infected with COVID. So they don't have COVID anymore. They just have these symptoms that won't go away.
So what do we know about long COVID and kids? Do we have any numbers on how many kids are getting these long-term COVID effects? Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so the issue with long COVID is that it's not very well understood in adults in the first place. We don't know for sure what share of people who get COVID have lingering effects. And if it's little understood in adults, it's really little understood in kids. Some of the best data that we have comes out of the UK, where they estimate between about 13 and 15% of kids who are ages 2 to 16 had COVID symptoms 5 weeks after they were infected. So those are those lingering symptoms. But we really, it's so complicated with kids and COVID because unlike adults who sometimes are asymptomatic, kids are much more often asymptomatic. So we don't even have a good denominator to know how many kids. So we might know how many kids seem to have these long COVID symptoms, but we don't know how many kids have had COVID. So it's really hard to tell what percentage of kids who get COVID end up with long COVID symptoms. It seems to be less common than in adults, and it seems to be more common for teenagers than littler kids. And that's good news for people who are vaccinated, because now the vaccines, with the Pfizer vaccine going down to age 12, unless they are immunocompromised or so they don't develop good immunities with the vaccine, kids can get vaccinated and then parents don't have to worry as much. But for those littler kids, there still isn't a vaccine available and might not be until fall. And so it's a concern for parents who are trying to make decisions about what they want to do do with their kids in the next few months.
As you talked about, it's tough to get any exact numbers in terms of how many kids are suffering from long COVID. But of some of the cases we do know, what sorts of effects are some of these kids getting from long COVID?
Yeah, so it's similar. It seems to be similar to adults, where you can have kind of the muscle and joint pain, the fatigue, the loss of taste and smell, and that type of thing. And for some kids, I imagine it's very disruptive. We've heard stories of kids who are athletes who can't do any of the stuff they were able to do before. Some of those symptoms, if it's loss of taste and smell, that might be very irritating, but it wouldn't be probably as serious as some of those more debilitating symptoms. But it sort of seems to run the gamut as it does in adults.
So as you had a chance, again, to speak to a number of people who work in the healthcare industry, how could the variants impact things, and especially the Delta variant? Because as we're seeing in hospitalization numbers, the age of people who are being hospitalized is dropping pretty significantly over the past few weeks and months. So talk a little bit about how those variants could impact things and some of the concerns we're hearing about those.
Yeah, as with anything with the variants, I think there are sometimes more questions than answers, but we do know that the variant, especially the Delta variant, is more transmissible than the original strain of COVID-19 that showed up. And then there's also some concern. I know I heard the Minnesota Department of Health today talking about how the share of cases of people who have been hospitalized has gone up. I think with the original COVID-19 strain, it was 5% of cases that were hospitalized. With Delta, it's 16%. And so while we don't have definitive information on whether this strain is more dangerous and severe than the other strains, it does seem to be creating higher levels of hospitalization, which is a concern. Where, like you said, we've seen the average age of hospitalization drop, and there's some concern that if this is a more severe strain, it might also be more severe in children who, as we all know, are still the younger kids still aren't vaccinated, so that's a concern.
And as you said, vaccines for kids under the age of 12 are at least months away, which means we're probably going to be in the school year before any vaccinations are available for kids. So what recommendations are we getting from health professionals right now?
Yeah, so I talked to Dr. Beth Thielen, who's a pediatrician and a professor at the U, and she said that people just really need to be weighing sort of their personal risk tolerance right now when they're making decisions about their kids. I mean, long COVID in kids is still pretty rare, as are some of the other complications that kids see. And so parents should be weighing some of that more social emotional learning, those things. It is important that kids get to socialize and that kind of thing. But if your kid is immunocompromised, if they've had an organ transplant, that type of thing, you might be making different calculations in this. And people accept all kinds of risk in their lives, whether it's driving in cars or riding on roller coasters and things like that. And people just need to be aware of sort of what the local transmission rates are in their area, and then kind of assess what type of risk they're comfortable with, whether that's maybe having their kids get together with other kids outside at camps that require masks. Maybe they're comfortable inside, but they need to kind of assess their own risk tolerance.
We're speaking with Greta Call. She is the data reporter for MinPost, website minpost.com, as we're chatting through a couple of the recent pieces that she wrote. And want to move on to another article you wrote that has to do with price increases and inflation that we've been seeing in Minnesota and around the country. So what are the exact numbers we're seeing in terms of price increases? I know a lot of economists use the CPI or Consumer Price Index to measure inflation, and we've been seeing this for the past several months. So talk about some of the latest numbers we've seen, especially since those June numbers just came out today.
Yeah, so today we got the June numbers, and they show that the CPI, which is the Consumer Price Index, which is an index that measures basically the Bureau of Labor Statistics has people calling stores and looking up prices at stores all over the country to kind of figure out how much things that people buy are costing and whether that's going up or down over time. And then they weight things based on kind of how important they think they should be in the index. And that number is something that economists watch to determine how fast inflation is happening in the economy, so how fast things are rising in price. This morning, the BLS announced that prices had risen, the consumer price index, so it shouldn't be seen as prices have risen this much. But the CPI increased by 0.9% in June after increasing by 0.6% in May. And those are the fastest month-to-month increases we've seen since 2008. So that's ringing some alarm bells that prices are rising quickly, which is leading to people being worried about inflation.
And as you had a chance to speak to a number of economists, did they think that these price increases were going to be permanent, or does it sound like, well, some of these could be permanent and others could not be? Talk about that aspect a little bit.
Yeah, so I think the thing that's interesting about this is I think people are noticing some of these price increases, right? Like if we look at what they are, the big ones that you hear about are used cars and new cars. But some of the other ones are like restaurant prices, which I know I've noticed have gone up a little bit, and energy prices and things like that. But what economists are sort of saying, some are saying that it's worth worrying about, and others are saying that it isn't. We saw the Fed recently decide not to raise interest rates, which could constrict the amount of cash in the economy and slow down inflation, which is a signal that the Fed is not particularly concerned about this yet. I talked to an economist at the Fed, and he said that most of the biggest increases that we're seeing are in areas that were really depressed in prices over the pandemic. So the way we typically look at CPI numbers is we look at how much what the CPI was for something a year ago and then what it is this month. And so when you look at things like plane tickets and hotel rooms and things like that, they were really cheap a year ago because of the pandemic. And so some economists are looking at the increases and saying, well, yeah, of course, it's just a return to normal. But yes, of course, the percentage increase is big because it was so low a year ago. In other cases, you have sort of these weird pandemic hangover type increases. So one thing that we've heard a lot of concern about is the increase in prices for used and new cars. And economists point to those and say, well, the reason that used cars are so expensive right now is because rental car fleets are not offloading their old stock. They weren't used very much during the pandemic, so they're not offloading their old stock onto the used car market like they normally do, which means there's not as many used cars on the market as there usually are, which means there's more competition for those cars. So they're saying that's very explainable, makes sense. New cars, there's been droughts in places where they make computer chips for new cars, and so that's constricted the supply of that, which has constricted the supply of new cars, which means there are people are competing more for the number of cars that are on the market. So they're saying it's not concerning. Other people are saying, you know, I don't know, I'm a little concerned about the federal deficit and things like that, that and that we will not slow down the rate of inflation, and we might continue to see this. Another possibility is that some things have started to cost more over the course of the pandemic. You know, maybe restaurants are providing just more hygiene, more services in their restaurant. They've had to expand. Maybe they have raised prices to account for that. We've seen restaurant wages go up on average too. So maybe restaurants have gotten more expensive, but maybe they just got it more expensive and then the inflation will stop now. But there was kind of a one-time increase. So there's a lot of questions about it. But I think it sounds like the Fed is not concerned enough to raise interest rates yet. And I'll be curious to see what things look like when some of these pandemic-related factors quiet down.
And finally, at least for us here in Minnesota, what areas are we seeing the biggest price increases in? As you were saying, I've noticed this too, where some of the restaurants I've gone to have had some price increases. But do we have any differences in Minnesota as compared to the rest of the country? Or is it just kind of typically around the country we're seeing the same sorts of prices of goods and services increase?
Yeah, so they do break it down. The BLS looks at prices in different metro areas. I looked at the whole Midwest in my story because people at the BLS told me that the specific numbers for specific goods are not always reliable at the really small geographic level. So some of the things that at least when I looked at the numbers last month were way up were unleaded gas. So the price per gallon had gone from $1.79 to $2.87 since May of 2020. There had been a 10% increase in the cost of a bottle of wine from $10.60 to $11.70, and a 6% increase in the cost of a pound of bacon from $5.90 to $6.20. And those weren't necessarily the biggest ones, but those are some of the ones that that I saw. And I'm looking for the biggest ones. Let me see if I can find this.
On that, interesting. Well, Greta, we are unfortunately just about out of time, but do appreciate your time today. That is Greta Call. She is the data reporter for MinPost. Website is minpost.com for the latest of what she's been writing. So check out what she wrote about the inflation we're seeing in Minnesota and around the country, and also long-term COVID effects in children over at minpost.com. Greta, as always, thanks so much for the time today. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right, we'll take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil up next on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm going to bring up, thank you very much to Greta Call and Brett Johnson for being with us today and that great little interview there. I actually want to bring up, because I got Rachel Hopper's going to join us in a little bit, the director of Parks and Trails Visitor Senators, Services, to talk about the increase in state park usage, which is going to be great. But I did want to mention they did indeed release the body cam footage. And I want to go through this really quick here because, frankly, I'm going to nitpick as I go through this. I'm not sure if necessarily either side is wrong in this stop here because, once again, I, as a white guy from the suburbs, am not going to tell a black person in Minneapolis, St. Paul, that they're irrational when they say they're being racially profiled during a police stop. Not in this day and age. No way. And I'll get to a little bit more of that in a second here. But this is from Bring Me the News. 30 seconds silent body due to the body camera buffering, the city spokesperson said. The officer gets out of the car, approaches Thompson's vehicle with a flashlight, begins to speak with him. When the audio begins, the officer asks Thompson, "Why in such a hurry?" Now, I do have a problem with that because that is the officer. The first thing he is saying to him is implying you're doing something wrong. Why are you in a hurry? Because if that's a white guy, he says, "You know why I pulled you over, old timer? Do you know why I pulled you over there, fella? Do you know why I got you over here?" That, when you say, "Why are you in such a hurry?" that is a loaded and leading question saying you've done something wrong. So I do have a little bit of a problem with that. Now, I'm nitpicking here. Overall, once again, I don't think the officer did anything too bad here. But I think that for if you're Thompson and that's the first thing out of your mouth, yeah, it does seem a little bit racial profiling, doesn't it? Yes. Thompson replies, "I don't think I took off like a bat out of hell. I just drove off." The officer asks for proof of insurance, and Thompson notes that on his phone, he says he's a state representative in the district. The officer questions his Wisconsin license, which Thompson affirms, then goes back to his squad car where he remains for about 14 minutes. After printing off a citation, he exits the squad car and approaches Thompson's vehicle, apologizing for taking so long. "You're suspended in Minnesota," the officer says. Thompson shakes his head no, that the officer continues, "What's wrong? That's what the computer says. If it's wrong, you have to deal with the DMV, the Department of Vehicle Services." Thompson then asks why the officer pulled him over, which he responds, "No front plate. And by the way, you took off like from the light back there." He says, Thompson says, "I'm too old to run from the police, man. You profiled me because you looked at me dead in the face and I got a ticket for driving while black. You pulled me over because you saw a black face in this car, brother. There's no way in hell I'm taking off with you behind me. You looked at this car and busted a U-turn and got behind my car, and that's the reason." The officer then interrupts and says, "The incident's on camera," before Thompson continues. "I know what I'm saying is when you're doing is wrong to black men," he says. "You need to stop that. Thank you so much but this ticket means nothing to me. What I'm saying is you have stopped racially profiling black men in the cars. Stop doing that." When the officer contends there's no racial profiling involved, Thompson agrees, continues to claim he was profiled. The officer says good night as he walks away. Video ends. In a statement Monday, Thompson said he argued the criminal justice system uses the pretextual stops as a core issue, which they do. And I will say, of all the things, if there's anything wrong here, I say, why is such a hurry? As the first question the officer asks is a loaded question. Now, that being said, I don't think either side in that confrontation was wrong. I honestly do not. I think the officer seemed to be fairly respectful in that case. And I think Representative Thompson, as a black man, has a right to say, I feel like I'm being racially profiled, especially when the first words are, why in such a hurry there? And once again, if this was a white guy, first of all, how many cars do you see driving around without a front license plate on that are currently being driven by a white person that are not being pulled over? There's probably quite a few. I see them every once in a while. But as we've talked about before, when a white guy gets pulled over, it's, do you know why I pulled you over there, old timer? That's kind of what they do. So that being said, I don't think either person is wrong here. And I don't think the Minnesota Republican Party thinks that either, because their new narrative is there has to be an investigation into where Representative Thompson lives. Now, funny story, about 5 or 6 years ago, wasn't there a representative up north of the metro area who didn't seem to live in his residence or his district? And as a matter of fact, people kept trying to go to his house where he supposedly was a daily resident, and there was months worth of newspapers and daily shoppers and stuff, and no one ever answered the door, and he never was there. And I don't ever remember any Republican ever saying, we need an investigation into that guy. They basically kept their mouths shut. But they see, as Republicans do, a black man, and they can go and sell that in outstate Minnesota saying, we're keeping the black people under control, so they're going to go after Thompson. That's just the way the Republican Party of Minnesota works. But that being said, I'm going to be consistent because I don't like that. And I think, as we mentioned before, that he says he's got a Wisconsin license, and then when he gets pulled over, he says he lives on Blair Avenue, which is out of his district. Okay. It's time for the DFL leadership. First of all, I'm kind of surprised you allowed someone, it sounds like when he registered his address to run for office, he had a P.O. box. How, I don't know. But it's time to call Representative Thompson, say, let's go to your house right now. And it should be your house. We should be able to go into it because it's your house. And if his residence does not match up to his district, well, then you have to ask for his letter of resignation because he ran for office not living in the district that he is representing, and we need to get a special election in there. And you can't have that. There are rules to this, how this works, and you can't just have someone who doesn't live in a district run in a district. And it does sound like there is definitively an amount of evidence here that says that this guy is not currently living in his district. And the reality is the Republicans are going to, and once again, the problem is if it's true, if he is truly not living in his district, the longer the DFL waits for this to get resolved, the worse it's going to get. Just pull him aside, say, let's go to your house. If you can't show me a house you got a key to get into that's in your district, then we need to ask you to resign because you're not representing the district that you're supposed to be living in. That's not how this works. And I don't feel as if that's a standard beyond anything, because that's the standard for everyone. And that's the standard I got upset about with that Republican in north of the metro a few years back who clearly wasn't living in his district. You can't have that. You have to have people who are there in the district. So we'll see where that goes. We'll take a break. Come on back. When we do return, we'll talk state parks. We'll get away from politics for a little bit. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show on your Tuesday, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So to prove that you can find a silver lining to every gray cloud, last year, of course, when the pandemic hit, we were here at the station, like everyone else, we're like, what do we do now? And we were trying to figure out what was open, and one of the things that we took some time to do was contact parks, and not just the state parks. Of course, we have one national park here as well, but the city and county parks. And we found out that for the most part, and Governor Walz put out the rules saying, get out in the parks. Now, the buildings might not be open, but the parks are going to be open to give people an opportunity to go out and do stuff. And so, if, as you remember hearing, we did, and we did a lot of it. And we not only did we do a lot of it, we took a lot of photos. We ended up putting calendars out about it and stuff like that, of going into these parks and seeing these unbelievably beautiful nature areas that are across not only the Twin Cities Metro, but the state parks, which are exceptional, which is why it is so cool. I just saw the story. The park passes, we are actually seeing a dramatic increase of state park permits. The sales are up 60% so far this year, which is fantastic. That's why I'm bringing on Rachel Hopper, Director of Parks and Trails Visitor Services from the DNR, to join us to talk about the fact that it is so cool that people of the state of Minnesota are going out to these amazing state parks. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Matt. How are you today?
I'm doing very well, because I got to tell you, I'm glad to finally have someone on from the parks because of that reason. But I got to the point last year, I think about July or August, and I was like, this is just such a gem in this state. I think I was over at Afton. And yeah, I just seen a snake. And then I climbed that huge hill where you go up to the top, that plateau area there, that prairie area. And it was just, I was just saying, this is just such spectacular areas. It is remarkable to me that they are here, and I'm just so glad we do have them. The Minnesota state parks are just brilliant.
Oh, we, you know, in Minnesota, we're blessed with 75 state parks and recreation areas. And then also we have, in addition to that, 25 state trails.
Yes.
So we are just really, really lucky. And if you're really into water recreation too, we, in addition to that, we have 35 state water trails. So anywhere you go in the state, there's something available for you, either state park, state trail, state water trail, or state forest rec area if you're looking for kind of a more rustic experience as well. So there's something for everyone in any corner of the state.
One of the things that became apparent to me when I was visiting the parks is how well the parks represent all the geological and geographical areas of the state. And I did actually, I wanted to eventually at some point find out, you know, I don't know how much of the history of the acquisition of the park lands and how that they looked at it, but whoever was behind it, when you look at the diverse nature running from the southwest part of the state up to the North Shore, of course, the Bemidji area, you go on down to the river valleys down on the southeast side of down the state, there clearly seems to have been a very coordinated effort to make sure that every different area of the state had some representation within the state parks.
Yeah, well, interestingly, so when state parks were first established in state law, our first state park came about, is of course Itasca State Park is our oldest state park, 1891. So we're very lucky to have that. But when the Outdoor Recreation Act passed in the 1970s, it kind of established the statutory purpose for all of these different types of public recreation lands, and state parks are unique in that suite of different types of, public lands available for recreation for everyone, in that they are particularly meant to preserve and protect important natural cultural resources mm-hmm. in the state of Minnesota. And we're lucky in Minnesota that we have like three major biomes come together in this state. So, you know, Northwest Minnesota is very unique from Northeast Minnesota, which is really unique from kind of central and southeastern portion of the state, which is very different than the southern and southwestern part of the state. So it's just, we have so many unique state parks. Well, each one essentially is unique, and each one was established in state law as a state park for a specific purpose. And whether that's for preserving and protecting a specific cultural resource or a particular natural habitat type, but the majority of our parks within the statutory boundary of state parks, the majority of the land is actually in kind of a more conserved or protected status, and a smaller portion is actually open for recreation. But you wouldn't know it when you walk into most of those parks because, you know, there's biking trails, hiking trails. There's, you know, in a lot of our parks, we have beautiful swimming beaches. And so there's just so many different, and, you know, campgrounds galore. In some, we have lodging opportunities as well. In fact, in some other ones, we have restored historic buildings to then be preserved as a rentable cabin. Mm-hmm. And so there's just so many different opportunities for basically anybody with any type of interest in the outdoors. There's something to do in a state park for
well,
you.
Well, and I'll praise your designers, because that's one of the things, you know, first of all, I think there's a lot of states that don't have as good as state parks as we do. But as well, I've been to other state parks where there's a biking trail right next to a campground, and there's not a lot of necessarily separation there. And I've always been surprised at how well the parks are designed, even on fairly small tracts of land, where purpose activities in there. Whoever's designing them, they do a great job as well. I've got to give them credit on that.
Oh, well, I'll pass it on to my colleagues. Thank you.
Of course, we talk a lot of the services camping there. I mean, are you seeing, obviously, we're talking about the permits, and I'm going to promote the permits here in just a second, but let's talk about some of the other things, especially the camping. Now the parks are open, we're into the later part of summer here. Are you seeing as well just a pretty dramatic increase in the use of the campsites and the other facilities that were within these campgrounds or in the parkland?
Yeah, actually, so we've been kind of watching because people have been asking. They're like, wow, with the pandemic and visitation levels in state parks went up so high and it's so different from 2019, what's going to happen in 2021? And we were all kind of thinking that visitation levels would moderate and be lower than 2020 levels, but higher than pre-pandemic levels, mm-hmm. just because as more things open up and more options open up for people, we were assuming people would go back to some of their kind of regular alternative, free time activities. However, one of the things we're finding, we've been pleasantly surprised and seeing, for instance, our camping and lodging rates are higher than they've ever been.
Wow.
We don't compare them to last year's numbers because last year we were our campgrounds and lodging opportunities were closed until June, and then it was kind of gradually reopened. But when you look at 2019 levels, we're between 25 and 35% higher than 2019 levels in occupancy. And then now that we've just pulled data on annual permit sales for the first half of the year, we're up over 70% in annual permit sales between 2021 and 2019, but an additional 24% over 2020 levels. So it's just, we've been continuing to see higher visitation levels than we were expecting for 2021, which is good. What we were hoping for is, I mean, at first when the pandemic hit, nobody quite knew what was going to happen. We didn't know if people were just going to completely stay away or come in droves to the parks. And that kind of unknown was happening across the entire country. And what we were seeing was, the pandemic caused so much stress and anxiety with so many people, and it also limited other opportunities. So what people were doing is getting out in nature, what we were finding. And it wasn't just state parks, but other types of recreation too. And people were getting out into nature, which there's hundreds of studies that have shown that spending time in nature reduces stress and improves mental and physical well-being. And so it's just been great to see that, people have been kind of recognizing that connection between spending time in nature and then the come from that. And so we were also very pleasantly surprised to see that trend is continuing into 2021, because those benefits are real and these lands belong to everyone. And we want all Minnesotans to feel safe and welcome and invited to the outdoors.
I can attest. I mean, I got through last year because of the parks, and the state parks were one major reason, a major stress relief. I do want to mention, 70% on the state permits. Wow, that's amazing. I want to encourage everyone on two things. One, not only does that park permit get you access to all the state parks, which is an amazing value, unbelievable value, but as well, we should mention, this is a year-round thing. There's a lot of people that go use these, and we talk about the summer, and obviously a lot of people use vacation time in the summer. I can attest, the state parks in fall are spectacular. You have people that go on out and do hiking in the winter. Springtime is fantastic. You can use this pass all year round. It is not just a limited time, and it gives you an insane amount of bang for your buck when you're looking at a family activity that you can do together for that stress relief. I think they're fantastic.
Yeah, and it is a great deal. So, $7 for a daily pass. So if you want to just go in for one day, it's $7 for just that day. But an annual pass at just $35, again, gets you to all 75 state parks and recreation areas for an entire calendar year. So if I went out today on July 13th and bought an annual park permit pass, I would be able to go to any state park or recreation area through the end of July in 2022. So it is a great deal. And, you know, I would just encourage you to test it out and try out one of your unknown parks on the list. And if you're also interested, we have a couple of loyalty clubs right now. The Passport Club and the Hiking Club are fun clubs to belong to, and they help kind of challenge you to get out to all 75 state parks and recreation areas. And it's a really kind of fun challenge and adventure. For the hiking club, you get to hike kind of these special trails that are designated in each of the parks and recreation areas, and then there's a code word in each of on each of them, and then you turn it in for rewards like a free night of camping. So
nice.
they're great kind of books too, and it allows you to, instead of just going to the same kind of favorite state park over and over again, it allows you to explore new and unknown state parks. I call them kind of the hidden gems in the system. So that's always been fun for me.
All right. And I want to make sure we have time here, because we got to get into the end of the show here. But once again, $35 gets you that annual pass. Get that annual pass. It is a great value, as well as also there's a lot of the DNR has got great websites listing all the state parks. If people are interested in more information on how to get those permits, or I mean, I know they can just go to any state park and get one right at the gates. But if there's a place online, where should they go?
They can just go to mndnr.gov. And it'll pull right up, and on the home page you have great resources right there. We have a DNR Information Center, and they're available not 24/7, but long hours every day of the week, and so they can answer your questions. Otherwise, just go to state parks page on there, and it'll show you kind of a beautiful map of all the different state parks and trails across the whole state.
Rachel Hopper, Parks and Trails Visitor Services with the DNR. Rachel, you guys come back anytime. I love your parks. You guys do such a great job over there, and it is truly a gem. And if I can get everyone in the state to get a $35 permit and get in those parks, I'll do my best, okay?
Thank you, Matt. Great talking to you.
Take care. Rachel Hopper with the parks. Get out into the parks and go get those. Let's make that number a little bit higher than 70%, shall we? Let's take a final break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950.
Hey, it's Tom. It's time to stop renting your energy from the utility company. Make the switch to solar power with All Energy Solar. When you pay your utility bill, there's nothing to show for it. It's never paid off. But with solar energy, you can save 50 to 100% on utility expenses. And with lots of federal and local incentives available, now's the time to go green with All Energy Solar. Get a free, no-obligation virtual consultation today at allenergysolar.com.
AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Yeah, I got to tell you, the two that I think that I like the most are either Blue Mounds or Split Rock Creek out in the very western side of the state. I got out there just because they're so different from everything else you see in the state. They're out in that very western part. I mean, it gets more like the Dakotas a little bit. But they're all fantastic. If you get the chance to go on out there, enjoy the parks, do it. Once again, $7 to get in the gate for a day pass. Get the $35 pass. Because no matter what, then all you have to do is hit, you know, eight parks in a year, and you got enough, you know, there you go. Off you go. And, I mean, Cicada, Nearstrand, Frontenac, Afton, William O'Brien, Lake Maria, got up there, Minnesota Valley, got down there. Banning, St. Croix, the Interstate State Park got up there as well. I mean, I've been to so many of them. It's so worth it, and I highly recommend it. And you want to know the truth is, as much as Republicans like to complain about government, the park system is government that works. And so when Republicans were trying to hold that hostage for the clean car stuff, that's not what you do, because that's something that works. And reality is, once again, a lot of these rural communities, they need that revenue. So go visit the parks, visit the local towns, help them out. It's a great deal. Go visit the DNR. I'll link to all that stuff a little bit later on. We'll spotlight as well Rachel Hopper on that interview. Native Roots Radio, they're coming up next. Have a good one. We're back with Stein on a Wednesday. Until then, see you.